Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Good day, good friends. Welcome back to the Bill Press Pod and today's special guest. Well, you know, there are 435 members of Congress, but Congressman Maxwell Frost of Florida's 10th Congressional District stands out among all the others for several reasons. One, he's the youngest member of Congress, elected when he was only 25 years old. Two, he's the first Gen Z member of Congress. And three, he's the first Afro-Cuban member of Congress. But Maxwell Frost was a mover and shaker before he was elected to Congress, active in campaigns for Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and Barack Obama, active in the Black Lives Matter movement, and national organizing director for the March for Our Lives movement on gun safety. And Congressman Frost has already made an impact in Washington, helping persuade President Biden to create the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention and leading the Democratic Party's efforts to inspire and energize young voters. Today, he scores another big first. For him and for us, he's the youngest guest ever on the Bill Press Pod. Congressman Frost, it is so great to have you on the Bill Press Pod today as our guest. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
So, Congressman, I guess this was your second State of the Union. I want to start with just some things that are going on these days. Your second State of the Union, how'd Joe Biden do? What was your reaction?
I think he did a great job and he did what he needed to do and more. You know, there's been these concerns about him being old and this and that. And he came out fiery, strong, talking about the issues that are on the minds of people. He also talked about what he wants to do and the work that needs to be done that hopefully he and we'll be able to do over the next 4 years. So I think he did a great job.
He hardly, after that speech, it'd be hard to make the argument that this guy is ready for the nursing home, right?
Well, you know, they've changed their tune. They're not saying that anymore. You know, he was a senile old man, keeping him in the basement. Now they're saying he's mad. And, you know, someone on Fox was saying that maybe we should drug test them. It looks like they gave him something. So, I mean, from old senile nursing home to mad guy might be on drugs or whatever, I think, you know, it shows that they are, as we like to say, coping with the fact that the president really did a great job.
They're having a hard time getting their story straight, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So he talked about some issues of great importance these days, Congressman. Let's start with the border. The president made the point, any solution to the border crisis, which had been shaped by a bipartisan group, had been blocked by Donald Trump, and he appealed to Republicans to join him in passing that legislation. Any chance, do you see, of coming together on that issue?
We'll see. We'll see. And I mean, the president made a good point, which is true. You know, Republicans have been talking about this. They've been wanting to do something about it. Supposedly, Democrats, Republicans got together on the Senate side, created bipartisan piece of legislation. I do have to say it's a piece of legislation that I actually oppose personally. But besides the point, the thing we have to understand is that they walked away from it completely once Donald Trump picked up the phone and said, don't pass it because I think it'll help Joe Biden, which I think just shows where the priorities of the Republican Party are. Time and time again throughout this entire Congress, it hasn't been, how do we get things done? Even the things that they care about or the solutions they care about. But what are we going to do to make sure that we put Donald Trump in the best position? And that's not the way that governing should work.
What are your problems with the legislation, Congressman?
I think that in terms of the provisions on the border and the fact that it doesn't do anything to help give speedy path to citizenship for undocumented people, it doesn't feel like a compromise where we came out really on the top. No immigrants were included in the conversations, including the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. So I do have some pretty you know, I do have some problems with it. I think we do have a crisis at the border, a humanitarian crisis. I think we need an orderly process to process asylum, but making asylum harder to get and essentially trying to water it down is not the solution here. My mom came here as a refugee under asylum. It's a very personal thing to me. So that's why I, you know, I'm not a fan of the bill myself. However, I'm not a fan of the bill for policy reasons. Republicans aren't fans of the bill because Donald Trump told them he wants to run immigration.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, it's a, it really calls out the hypocrisy of the Republican Party.
Do you think that Speaker Johnson would ever allow a vote, floor vote on this bill? And if he did, would it pass?
I think if he allowed a floor vote on the bill, I think has a really good chance of passing in a bipartisan way. I'm not sure if he'll do it. We'll see. I mean, Donald Trump doesn't want it to happen. If he did it, I would assume that there'd be some sort of motion to vacate on the floor within a few days. So it really depends on him, you know. So I'm not really sure. I know as much as he does. Not much. unfortunately, that's been the tune of this Congress.
You're right. And of course, the president also spoke to the issue of Gaza. You, Congressman, if I'm correct, have called for a ceasefire in Gaza. The president stressed increasing humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza. Has he done enough? President Biden done enough in your judgment?
I think the president's been doing great work on this. It's a very difficult situation to manage. I don't envy his position at this point. I do think we need to do a lot more in terms of pushing Israel to stop this bombing. So we have this, you know, we need a bilateral ceasefire deal. The president has been using that language recently, fighting for a 6-week ceasefire. I'd like to see a lasting ceasefire just to make sure that we save lives and that all of the hostages can get home. And that way we can move on and figure out, all right, the status quo isn't working. How do we move towards a two-state solution? It's tricky. It's difficult. We have Hamas who doesn't want a two-state solution. We also have Bibi Netanyahu who also doesn't want a two-state solution. And so I think America is going to have to play a role here in helping to make sure that we live in a place where Palestinians have the safety and dignity they deserve, and so do Israelis. But the crisis is beyond, I mean, it is, what's going on in Gaza right now is a travesty and a stain on humanity. And so I think we need to do more and everything we can to stop it.
And it is the one issue, Congressman, right, that seems to really have excited and brought young people out in great numbers and almost all over the place, even people trying to get to the Oscar ceremony the other night, right? Traffic was blocked by protesters about the war in Gaza. You yourself at your Med Soul Fest recently, earlier in the month, right? Had protesters at that event as well. So what do you tell young people about this? Just hold your horses, be patient, or encourage them to protest as much as they want?
Well, I think that, you know, this is part of our democracy is people can protest. I come from protesting and I understand. I mean, you know, in my district, I have a good amount of Palestinian folks in my district who have lost family members. In fact, there's one person who's lost, I think now over 45, 50 family members in Gaza. So I would never tell people to not protest or tell people to not make their voices heard. I mean, that's part of what this is about. What I would tell people is to be strategic in the way that this happens. What we need right now is we need a ceasefire. And so I would focus organizing around calling for that. And the president called for that in the speech. And so the question is, what's next and how do you go from there? But I understand, you know, the thing I'd also tell people is, you know, if there was a President Trump right now, I think things would be a lot worse. That doesn't mean don't protest, but what it means is, like, let's keep things in perspective and figure out how do we move to a place where we achieve this ceasefire, where we achieve the a Palestinian state and a two-state solution, so that way there's peace. And
right.
That's what I'm interested in. But no, I would never shame people for protesting. Yes, there were, you know, two sets of demonstrators at the Mad Soul Festival, ones that were outside calling for a ceasefire that we support those calls for ceasefire, and then one at the end, which are actually folks who don't want a ceasefire because they believe Hamas are freedom fighters. I don't align with them at all. So it just, there's also nuance within this too.
Right. So, of course, Congressman, we know that the issues we talked about, whether it's the border or Ukraine or Gaza, may be important to us, but the most important issue of all you have to deal with is TikTok. What are we going to do about TikTok?
Yes.
Have you ever gotten it? Have you gotten more calls about any other issue than you've gotten about TikTok in your office?
I couldn't say for sure, but I mean, yes, we are. Our office, like every other office, was bombarded with the TikTok calls over the last week.
And what are they telling you? And I mean, as I understand it, this legislation would effectively ban TikTok in the United States unless this company that owns it now were to sell the platform, right?
Yeah, which would, you know, if this passes, TikTok will likely be banned. I mean, if TikTok can't find a buyer, the app will no longer be acceptable in the United States. There's a lot that kind of hangs in the balance here. I don't think it's a piece of legislation I'll be supporting. I think that there are huge issues we need to fix in terms of social media. No doubt about it. We need to keep people safe online. We need to keep kids safe. We need to make sure that we protect our data and privacy. But all of this really comes down to the way these algorithms work and the way our data is fed into these algorithms. I feel, and this isn't to call any legislator lazy, but I will say that I feel like these talks of bans strike me as a little lazy versus figuring out how are we going to directly prescribe regulation and data privacy legislation that keeps us all safe and doesn't ban an app like TikTok that has, you know, I don't know how many people are on TikTok, like 170 million people or something like that in America alone. I mean, there's so many small, we hear a lot from small business owners in Central Florida that use TikTok every day to get customers and content creators, young content creators, people who have education shows, people who have shows that talk about LGBTQ plus community, the climate crisis, things like that on TikTok, who make a living doing that. And so it'll have drastic impacts for everyone. It's not just the, you know, young voter thing and they don't have TikTok. I mean, that's something to think about too, but we have to think about the economic impact, which there will be one. And so I'm not for that. I am for making sure we protect Americans' data. So let's talk about that. Let's legislate that. Let's regulate that for all social media, not just pick one because we want to seem hawkish on China and then ban it. I'm just not sure that's a good way of handling this.
Too often we see the Congress or other legislatures taking the easy way out, right? Which is not the best way. Good point. So I want to circle back to, I guess TikTok is a good bridge to that. People look to you, a congressman, particularly since you're the youngest member of Congress, to talk about young voters today. There certainly is a cynicism. Maybe there always has been, right, or always is among young voters, but especially today. So what are you doing and what do you think the Democratic Party ought to be doing to motivate young voters and say, yeah, you may not be happy with everything, but, you know, get off your butt and get involved?
Yeah, well, what I'd say is this. I mean, the first thing I want to say is Gen Z is the most politically active generation we've seen in our country. And I don't have to dig far into history to prove it. I mean, 2020, highest youth voter turnout ever in a presidential election. 2018, highest youth voter turnout in a midterm. 2022, second highest youth voter turnout in a midterm. So we're doing a good job here. And yes, a lot more needs to happen. But the youth vote has always been a challenge, and it's not a uniquely American problem. It's actually a global problem in getting young people to vote. There's a lot of institutional barriers that keep young people from voting. And it's a weird time to introduce a very important, you know, habit that we hope people will take on. So that's the first thing I would say. The second thing I would say is young people obviously do care about politics, and I think we just need to connect their passions, their fears, their aspirations to getting the right people in office. And so what I always encourage people to do is think about the issues you care about and you look at that ballot. And a lot of times it's a binary choice and that's unfortunate. I actually, you know, I believe that I'm not the biggest fan of just having a two party kind of system. Right. But I also acknowledge I'm not going to change that today,
right?
Year and 5 years. Right. I mean, it's something you work towards if that's something that you're passionate about. You look at those choices and you decide, what is going to help me and what is going to help, you know, generation or my movement fight for the world that we want to live in. And you look at these choices we have coming up and it's so, so clear. You know, you have someone who's done great work on the climate crisis through the Inflation Reduction Act, someone who started the first ever office in gun violence prevention. This is very personal for me because the first bill I introduced as a member of Congress was to create the Federal Office of Gun Violence Prevention. I knew that wouldn't pass this year or this Congress because Republicans have control. But the president took my legislation, implemented it via executive order, and now the office is there. And it's not just, oh, there's some office in the White House. Millions and millions and millions of dollars being given out across the entire, granted, across the entire nation to community violence intervention. If you protested during Black Lives Matter like I did, I was tear gassed, maced, arrested, I went to jail. Fighting for more community involvement in public safety, that is what the president is doing. Community violence intervention gives money to community-based groups to end the violence before it happens. So that way we step away from solely relying on just policing and the carceral system, and we move to a place where our communities have the resources they need. That office is doing that. And if Donald Trump is elected, guess what happens on day one? The office goes away. The money goes away. And so for me, even on just that issue alone, the stakes are very clear. It doesn't mean you don't keep fighting for what you believe in. Look, I have pushed the president on many things. I post things all the time. If there's something I disagree with, I say it. But I also see the great things he's done too. And that's what organizing is about. It's not, I hate you all the time or I love you all the time, right? It is a push and pull. It's a relationship like any other relationship that you have. So the question is, who do you want a relationship with? Donald Trump or Joe Biden in terms of a political relationship? And I think it's very clear if you believe in defeating the climate crisis, if you believe in ending gun violence, affordable housing, and the issues that are really defining for our generation.
So as you point out, by the way, I just wanted to add, Congressman, so that all of our listeners know that you not only were the inspiration for that Office of Gun Violence Prevention in the White House, but when the president announced it, he invited you to introduce him in the Rose Garden to make that announcement, which was an honor that very few members of Congress ever have in their entire career. And for you to get it in your basic first year in Congress, Congressman, kudos to you. Great job.
I appreciate it. Thank you. It was honor of a lifetime. And I'm just so happy about the work that they're doing in that office. It's staffed by survivors. So it's I always like to say the office is great, but the question is, what do they do and who's running it? The president hit the nail on the head with it.
So as you outlined, and we're talking about young voters, it's a combination of the right policies, right, that are going to motivate them and the right people that they can trust, right? What I hear from a lot of Democrats, I don't share this, by the way, is given all the success you point out in the record turnouts in 2018 and 2020 and 2022, the doubt that I hear today is, in 2024, can an 81-year-old man provide that inspiration? And your answer?
Well, what I always like to point to is, I mean, look at the primaries, right? I mean, and young voters. Who did young voters really gravitate towards during the primaries? Bernie Sanders. Guess what? I got some breaking news here. Bernie Sanders is also an older guy. And so I think that, you know, if people have concerns, I understand. But the concerns, I feel like when it comes down to people voting in a voting booth, I don't think people are going to be thinking, who's the younger guy here? Donald Trump or Joe Biden? Number one, they're about the same age. They would have been in the same high school. They could have gone to high school together. And so I don't think people are going to be asking that question. I think people are going to be asking, who's going to protect my rights, who's going to protect abortion, who's doing what they can to make sure we see lives saved across the entire country, whether Palestinian or Israeli here and ending gun violence. I think those are the questions people will ask themselves in the booth. And I want to speak directly to some of the polling we've seen. We've seen people, you know, say in polls, yes, we think the president's too old, this and that. People are going to have concerns on many different aspects of many different candidates, but does it rise to the concern where they will vote for the other person or not vote at all? And that is what we don't have direct numbers on. But what I can tell you from my traveling the country and me speaking with people is, I think as people have kind of they're starting to understand that this is going to be between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. They know the direction they want to go in. And I hear that from progressives and even more conservative people alike. And here's the thing. The president isn't alone. A lot of us are going to be out there fighting to make sure people understand what's at stake. And I'm going to be one of them. I was laying in my bed the other night, and I was just, reading up on some polls and listening to a Donald Trump speech. I don't do that often, but I just did. And it pushed me to write this tweet where I said, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure this man's not reelected. And, we gotta make sure we reelect President Biden. I mean, the answer is clear. So he's not alone, and I'm not the only one. There's going to be a lot of people out there.
Do you believe the issue of reproductive rights, now two or three years after that Dobbs decision, is still one that resonates with young voters?
Yes, and not just young. I think it resonates with all voters. I mean, you have older people who are now seeing that their granddaughter has less bodily autonomy than they did. And so I think that is also a personal thing. I remember when I worked at March for Our Lives, a campaign that we were really excited about was young people writing letters to their grandparents asking them to vote for them and their safety in voting for people who believe in common sense gun reform. So oftentimes when we think about issues that quote unquote maybe are just a young person thing, it actually has a trickle up, I guess, effect that really impacts people no matter what age they are, because they don't want to see us go back. So I think abortion and bodily autonomy is still a hallmark issue.
A couple of other questions, Congressman, we haven't talked about yet. Climate change, what's happening in the state of Florida. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come be right back. If you just please hold on for a second, continue our conversation on the other side in just a minute. And today's podcast with Congressman Maxwell Frost, brought to you by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, the members of the UFCW, hardworking men and women, 1.2 million members strong under the leadership of President Mark Perrone. They're the ones who provide us such great service in our big retail stores like Macy's or Costco, in our big grocery stores like Safeway, and our chemical meat and poultry processing plants and cannabis plants. The UFCW, serving all Americans every day. We thank them for their great work and thank them for their longtime support of the Bill Press Pod.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back with today's podcast here on the Bill Press Pod. Very, very honored to welcome to our podcast Congressman Maxwell Frost from Florida's 10th Congressional District, joining us to talk about the issues of the day and his work on many of those issues. So, Congressman, if I had to identify one issue I think that you've taken the lead on, you mentioned you were the National Organizing Director for the March for Our Lives after the massacre at Marjory Stoneman Douglas School down in Parkland. And you and Senator Murphy from Connecticut have introduced legislation in Congress on gun violence. Other than the creation of the Office of Gun Violence Prevention in the White House, which again, you inspired, it must be very frustrating for you, Congressman, to see Congress willing to take no action at all to prevent gun violence, even though particularly school shootings, they continue, you know, shopping malls, theater shootings, the gun violence just doesn't go down, and yet Congress does nothing. How do you deal with that?
It's incredibly frustrating, and I got to tell you, it's a frustration that isn't new to me, you know, because I got involved in this fight when I was 15, so I've now been in the gun violence movement for over a decade, and I've sat, you know, I'm sitting in my office right now, and I like think back to being 15 years old, sitting in a similar office with people crying, talking about stories, a member of Congress giving us a hug, saying, I got your back, we're going to help you, and then the vote comes, and guess what? The same thing happens. They vote the same way they've always voted. And so that frustration isn't new for me. I've always been very frustrated with our government and Congress and the inability to do work to help save lives. Now, what I will say is I want to give people some glimmers of hope here. You know, since the March for Our Lives movement, we've seen an acceleration of the work in this movement. And I think it's because, you know, young people stood up and said, yeah, we call BS. We want to see a world where we can be safe and where our lives are valued more than the profits of the gun industry. And I will tell you now that I believe for the first time in our country's history that the movement to end gun violence is stronger than the NRA and the gun lobby right now. Wow. I think we are stronger. And I think you see it. And, you know, if we go back a decade ago and we talked about an assault weapons ban, not only was it not the hallmark or a top issue for Democrats, but also you'd have division within the Democratic Party about it. Now, if you are against assault weapons ban, you're very much in the minority of Democrats. And not just that, but it is a hallmark issue on our party platform, our national party platform. That's because the movement is stronger than it's ever been. The Office of Gun Violence Prevention, but there's been other stuff. We've seen executive orders from the president, a rulemaking process with the ATF to help strictly define what a guns dealer is. And this flew under the radar for a lot of people, but this is a workaround way of strengthening the strengthening universal background checks, because more people will fall under that designation where they have to do background checks for people they sell weapons to, right? So these are all things that have been happening because the movement is strong, and we have a long way to go, and we're moving there. I'll tell you, this Office of Gun Violence Prevention, I remember being on the House floor. I get notified 3 hours before. Marjorie Taylor Greene puts in an amendment to defund the office. It ends up being scheduled for a floor vote. I'm worried because Republicans outnumber us.
Yeah.
So I got to work. I started having conversations with both Democrats and Republicans. And at the end of the day, we saved the office with 8 Republican votes. So we're going in a really good direction.
Is the NRA as strong as it used to have really a lock, right, on not only all Republicans, but a lot of Democrats in Congress?
Yeah, no, they're not. They're not. And that's what I'm saying is for the first time, we're seeing that the NRA is weaker than the movement because it used to be more of a bipartisan organization, like you're saying. They had a lock on Democrats. I mean, I encourage people to go back and look at some old Democratic advertisements and commercials, you'd see Democrats proudly say, I'm endorsed by the NRA. Now, that's a no-go in a Democratic primary. And I think when you see an organization that has that bipartisan power, it does show that they have power on the Hill. But when they slowly move, and now you even see you know, these moderate Republicans, they're not even touting the NRA because they know that even moderate Republicans in their party, their own voters, want to see action on gun violence. So this issue has definitely shifted a lot. We have a long way to go. You know, I won't lie to you. We have a long way to go. But the actions we've seen from the president have been great. And when we take back the House of Representatives, I expect Congress to pass my bill.
You stated a little earlier or alluded to the fact that Joe Biden has delivered more on climate change than any other American president through the infrastructure bill and through the other investment bill. How do you see that going, Congressman, now? And what are the next goals? And you've been a leader in this climate change movement. What are the next goals? Where should we be heading?
Well, what we need is we need a drastic transformational legislation that's going to help us move even faster to net zero. You know, the climate crisis is already here. Like I like to say, you know, if you look back into the climate movement, the calls were always protect the future, protect the future, protect the future. Guess what the calls are now? Protect us now. We need help now. This is happening right now. And it's personal for me too, because I live in the state of Florida. I mean, the surrounding water in the state of Florida is the temperature of a hot tub, which means that hurricanes that come through not only last longer, but are have more devastating consequences that hurts all communities, businesses, Democrats and Republicans alike. And so now what I'm seeing is I have even more conservative business owners calling me and saying, what are we going to do about climate change? The resiliency work is important, but it's not enough. And we need to drastically think about the long term. So the Inflation Reduction Act is the most money and resources any country on the face of this earth has ever put towards combating the climate crisis. Huge win. And something that some of my colleagues say is the IRA is the deposit on the Green New Deal or whatever the next transformational piece of legislation looks like. And so there's a part two here that, you know, we need to get to. I'm a proponent of the Green New Deal, but whether it's that or something that takes significant parts of it, we need to move in an even more aggressive way to get to net zero, because it's harming us now.
So finally, Congressman, I have to ask you about the state of Florida. Okay, you know, I can remember when we thought of Florida as somewhat of a progressive state, never maybe really blue, but certainly purple, right? And now you got Ron DeSantis, the book banning, the anti-immigrant stuff, you know, the anti-LGBTQ community, right? DeSantis, this is where woke came to die, right? Give us some hope for Florida.
Well, the first thing that I'll say is, I was elected the same year Ron DeSantis won his reelection. A 24-year-old, well, at the time 25-year-old Afro-Latino progressive organizer musician was elected that year in the center of Florida. So I hope my election can help give some people hope. But let's not even just look at mine. Let's look at in the last year. We had two special elections in the state of Florida. We flipped two seats. One of them was the mayor of the biggest city, or one of the biggest cities, I think it is the biggest city actually, Jacksonville, in the entire state, Mayor Donna Deegan, who won her bid for mayor. That flipped from Republican to Democrat. Let's look at House District 45, which was flipped from Republican to Democrat when we elected Tom Keene, progressives and moderates. We all came together to make sure he would win, and he had a message that cut through, and he won. So I want to tell people that Florida is a state that is progressive and democratic in terms of policy, but a lot of times not in terms of politics. But what we see is that's changing, and people are starting to see that, wow, I believe in these democratic policies, so I need to vote for Democrats. And Republicans have done a good job of using the culture war to muddy those waters. But now people are starting to see through Don't Say Gay. People are starting to see through the book bans. These are things that are incredibly – or that are not popular with Republicans and Democrats alike. And the roosters are coming to roost, right, and in the state of Florida. I think they say it, right? The roosters.
I mean. I think so. And by the way, within the last 24 hours, Donald Trump has said online or in an interview that he wants to cut Social Security.
Yes, I saw that. I'm glad that he is finally just coming out and saying it fully, because, you know, in the State of the Union, the president brought this up and Republicans said, no, you're a liar. Some guy even yelled liar, trying to do like another Joe Wilson moment, I guess. And so the president said, well, I mean, it's good to hear that that's not what you want to do. But I'm glad that Donald Trump came out and just said it straight up, because as the Republican nominee, he's the leader of their party, which means the Republican Party, part of their official platform, is cutting Social Security. So
there it is.
Just something that people should know.
Well, Congressman, we're glad you're there. We're glad you're fighting the fight, the good fights, and doing a great job representing all of us, not just the people of Florida 10. Thank you for your great service. Thanks for your energy, and thanks for joining us on the Bill Press Pod.
Thanks for having me on.
And that's it. What a great pleasure to meet Congressman Maxwell Frost on the Bill Press Pod. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And now we will give you a break. Enjoy the rest of the week, but come back and see us on Friday for what promises to be a very lively roundtable. Joe Biden and Donald Trump are on the campaign trail every day this week. Donald Trump is still trying to get yet another delay in yet another trial. We'll see how that works out. Congress, meanwhile, is working hard just to keep the lights on. And President Biden is still working hard for a ceasefire, which would include bringing the hostages home in Gaza. We'll take a look at all of that and wrap it up Friday. And the next edition of the Bill Press Pod, our reporters roundtable. Have a great week, everybody. See you Friday.